Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is May 17, 2017, and we will pick up where we left off yesterday with a public hearing on SB 5541, Treasurer of the State. And before we get started, LFO, are there anything else to add?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, there's LFO has nothing to add, and except for one scheduling item for next week, and that is there'll be no scheduled meeting on Monday at this point. So when we're waiting on the rest of the week to fill in the schedule. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Well, with that being said, we will move ahead. We would like to say welcome and thank you to the big co-chair, Representative Nancy Nathan. Always an honor to have you here. And Mr. Treasurer, if you would join us at the table and we can pick off where we left off yesterday.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed, honored to be state treasurer. With me is Michael Parker, about whom I'll have more to say in a moment. We're going to pick up where we did leave off yesterday, as you said. And just as a quick reminder, we've been thinking about our structure in a couple of different ways as we have programs to serve Oregon governments. Those are the ones that we covered yesterday. Today we're going to cover two programs that serve Oregon families, those being the 529 network and Oregon Saves. Both of these programs, and we'll talk about them in considerably more detail in a moment, are funded by fees that are paid by those who participate. As it relates to the 529 network, these are families who are saving for post-secondary education expenses or disability-related costs in the case of Oregon Able. Again, Michael will say a lot more about that in a moment. As it relates to Oregon Saves, this is the retirement program. Representative Marsh is on the board that is set to launch soon. It too, following the model of the 529 network, will be the costs will be covered by those who are saving and the fees that they pay. So we'll move to the 529 network. This is where it sits in our structure. And we're fortunate to have Michael Parker with us, who's long been the executive director of that program, and he's got a lot to say about what we're doing there. Mr. Parker.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. For the record, Michael Parker, executive director of the Oregon 529 Savings Network. I will be fairly brief but detailed as we walk through some of this and certainly walk through the POP as it relates to the ABLE program. But I'll just start with our logo slide. We love logos at the network, and so I'm showing them all off to you today. This is the Oregon 529 Savings Network. Those members who have been here for several years or by any would remember that it used to be the Oregon 529 College Savings Network. That was the word college was removed last session to make room for the ABLE Savings Program. So now we're just the Oregon 529 Savings Network. So obviously under education, we have two plans that operate. Just as a way of a little bit of history, this is the 20th anniversary of the passage of the federal 529 legislation federally, and our legislation passed in the state of Oregon in 1999. The ABLE law passed back in 2014 at the end of that year, and we passed our ABLE legislation last session in 2015. So let's start out with the college savings side. We have two college savings programs that we currently run, the Oregon College Savings Plan, which is the direct sold plan that we offer the state residents that's directly sold to participants. We also offer a plan that's sold through financial advisors exclusively, and that's the MFS program. MFS is a mutual fund company located in Boston, and they've been with the state of Oregon under contract going on about 16 years now.
Mr. Chair, is that their logo?
That is MFS's logo, yes. And they, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson, they changed it recently, and we looked at it the same way you looked at it. Like, I don't even know what that is. It used to be the letters MFS kind of in blocks, and I don't know what that is.
It's kind of a corpuscle-y looking thing.
Yeah. We share that sentiment. So just as a little bit of history, currently, almost 174,000 accounts in our network now. That would include both the accounts under both of those programs. About $2.7 billion in assets under management. It's a far cry from the $10 million we had under management in the first year of the program. So we have obviously grown quite large. And $160 million we distributed for education savings in 2016. I think that's an important number, and we're actually proud of our distribution number now. While we are a mature program back in the early days, not a lot of distributions, now we're pumping out $160, $170 million a year to pay for those college expenses. So it's a nice number to see the program's actually working as intended.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
So how does it exactly work? I'm grandma. I've opened one of these accounts. It's time for junior to go to college. Do you write the check to the institution, or how does the money flow?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, however you would like us to do it. So I'll give you a couple of examples. If it's time for you to go to your grandkids to go to college, if you want the money sent directly to the institution, we will write the institution a check. You go on our website, pull down the menu, I want to go to Oregon State University, we write the check to Oregon State University. A lot of parents, however, will have us wire the money back to them so that they can actually distribute it. So when it's time for school, you may say, well, I need $5,000 in distribution. We wire it to your bank account that's on record, and you go ahead and distribute that money. So really, or we'll actually write you a physical check if that's what you prefer. It really is how you want to manage those dollars. We can do it any way that you really like. Very simple. We try to make it easy to get the money out, and if it's electronic funds transfer, it can happen the next day, literally. But we do allow you for you to send it to that institution if you want to.
One follow-up. Do you send it in increments? I'm trying to figure out the cost to the program. If I decide that I want to pay for my grandson by the credit hour or the semester, and you're writing jillions of checks versus here's 4 years worth of college.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, that's an issue. We currently do not charge you for distributions right now, but we really do want you to do it electronically. So we don't really want to write you a check. And I think we're going to see down the road where states are going to start charging for things that are not done electronically. A lot of states are moving to exclusively electronic delivery of materials in the plan. So all your disclosure, all your statements is all electronic. And if you want a hard copy, we'll certainly give you one, but we're going to charge you for it. I think that's what these things are going to move to keep costs down.
Thank you.
Senator Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are the funds only good to Oregon education? Also, is it available for room and board and stuff?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator DeBoer, the money can be used at any institution of higher education inside this country and out. The stipulation by federal law is that institution must be participating in federal financial aid. So as long as that's the case, and that includes two-year, four-year graduate schools, culinary schools, there's a pretty wide range, and which is why we don't talk about it as necessarily just for higher education for 4 years. You may want to go get a one-year certificate in welding or a two-year certificate in nursing. Use your college savings plan to get that education. And to follow up on your second question, it can be used for any expense that's required for admission to the school. What that means is tuition, fees, room and board, supplies, materials. The federal government finally just added computers to that list last year, which we've been harping on them for years. So it really is any required expense to be at that school you can use the money for.
Senator Johnson.
But this is grandma's money. Grandma's put it there.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though grandma's put it there, there are all of these exclusions up to this point, or do you think it's broad enough now with computers being added that it covers the needs of a freshman standing outside OSU?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, yes. We believe with the addition of computers and other electronic expenses like software and Wi-Fi, it does cover most every expense that you would have to go to that school. I'll give you a quick example. When you enroll at like Oregon State, you're going to get what's called the cost of attendance. Typically at Oregon State or U of O, it's about $20,000 to $22,000. That's all in, what the student would need all year. We would cover pretty much all of those expenses. Living expenses, you know, heat, gas for your car, those are all qualified expenses. Anything you
up
would
to the point that I funded the account.
Correct.
Yeah.
That is correct. The last point I'll make. The last point I'll make, we essentially average in the network about $250 million or so in new contributions each year. We are on track. I won't make any promises. We're on track this year to do, I think, close to $300 million in contributions if the market stays okay. So just a couple more points on college savings. I like to make this point since we're in Ways and Means. We are take no general fund support except for the loan that we'll talk about in a second for ABLE, but the college savings portion of the 529 network is completely self-supporting by the fees that are paid by investors in the plan, so we don't take any general fund support. We'll talk about ABLE in a second, but we took out a loan back in 2000 and 2001 to get the program started and paid that back in the first few years of the operation of the program. Again, we're really looking at, I don't want to talk a lot about how we market and how we distribute the plan, but we're really kind of moving in a direction where we really want to be more targeted with our promotion. And we want to reach out to every single group out there, which includes, not that we don't, but we're making a concerted effort, to more underserved communities around the state, more low-income families. I'll give you one statistic that I love. A child with a college savings account, regardless of the money in it, is three times more likely to enroll in college and four times more likely to graduate. The point I make here, it's not about the money necessarily, it's about the expectation that the parent has or grandparent has. I've got this account for you, I'm expecting you to use it, and it does, statistics show that it does help give that child a little bit more motivation to want to go to college. So again, we want to reach out and increase the reach of the accounts. We obviously want assets because we need assets, but we want every kid to have an account so then we can have a conversation with that family about what it means to get that kid in through school. And obviously we have a state tax deduction that really does help us. It is our one competitive advantage in Oregon, as other states have a tax deduction that allows for families to take that deduction for contributions each year. That deduction is, while not large, about $4,600 for a married couple filing jointly. It is enough of an incentive to get families to start thinking about putting money into the program. I just want to touch on a couple other of programs that we have that hopefully you'll hear about in the near future, and that's our Be College Ready program, which we launched with our outreach director, John Valley, about 3 years ago. And that's our program that really works with schools and gets into the schools and talks with parents about college savings. We offer homework folders and pencils to the kids, and then we do seminars and other things at the schools, PTA meetings and those kind of things, to really talk with parents about college savings. And the last thing I'll mention is we have a program called Baby Grad. And that's a program where if you have a baby in January, in the first 3 months of the year, we will seed that account if you open up an account with $25. We tested this for 3 months because we wanted to see how folks would respond to getting a seed account. And the statistics are really actually alarming. In the first 2 years of the program, we invested $38,000. The $25 cost us $38,000. We turned that $38,000 into $8 million in additional contribution. So the point here is, again, having that conversation, getting them to open that account, they will put more money in. And again, that's the point. Get them to be involved in the program. So we're thinking about trying to expand Baby Grad with some additional resources this next biennium to see if we can get more folks into the program in that fashion.
Senator Johnson?
I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but how is that not discriminatory, that if you happen to have a baby in the first 3 months of a calendar year, you're a winner? And if you're one day outside of that, not so much.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I would agree. It's why we're going to expand it to year-round. We wanted to test it to see first how it would work, and we are going to expand it statewide, obviously, and year-round.
It was a pilot
program.
With what source of funds are you going to expand it year-round?
It's our revenue that we receive from the program managers to do marketing and promotion for the plan each biennium.
And what will be the cost of the expansion year-round? Am I to say 3 weeks equals $38,000? Is that a
and just carry out the math? Or
no, we're very likely going to put we'll do it by quarter and put a cap on by quarter so that we can actually budget for this, because we don't have enough resources to get every kid $25. That would be about $1 million a year. We don't have those kind of resources. Clearly, we won't have to give every kid that, because everybody's not going to sign up. But we believe that expanding it year-round really gets that idea of we want to have this conversation with every parent and every household to get their account started.
Debbie Downer continues, I'm a brand new mom. Do you send me $25 and say, here's the address to sign up, or do you open an account for me, or how what's the mechanics of that?
Mr. Kocher, Senator Johnson, no, you have to open the account first. So what we do is we publicize the program. So you would have to hear about it, certainly, as a new mom. But once you open the account, we would look at, essentially say you had a baby, and because we collect the date of birth of your child, we would then just automatically, we would actually put $25 into your account. Once it's opened, we can't, by law, open an account for you. It's a personal decision. We need your social number and all that. We can't open that account for you. You have to do it.
Okay. I'm sorry to keep grinding on this. How long does the $25 stay there? Can I withdraw it immediately?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, yes. The $25 becomes yours, and that's a great question because that's what we were worried about. We were essentially worried about, well, we put $25 in, it becomes that person's money, and they could just take it out. But our stats show on these accounts that we funded, we had a pickup rate of 96%. So what I mean by that is 96% of the people added more money, 1% of those people closed the account. So we actually think that's a fairly good in return on what we want folks to actually do. Okay. And I will mention just again, before we move on to the next slide, we are working really hard to try to figure out ways where we can have this discussion with new parents. We have a current program with Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente has a goal of they're essentially saying to parents that a college education is a health benefit. Not having one is a health risk. This is Kaiser Permanente. And so they are working with us to do a pilot to distribute information at their hospitals. So they want to portray essentially that if people with college degrees or
post-secondary
education have better overall lifetime health. This is what they've told us. And so they want to help us distribute the information on college savings to their new mothers and fathers at their hospitals. So that's a program that we just are beginning to talk about, and we'll see where that leads us. Okay, so let's move on to ABLE. This is where I want to spend the bulk of my time because it's a new program. ABLE stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience, and this is a program that is near and dear to my heart. It's a program that essentially allows disabled Oregonians, disabled individuals, to save money without losing their federal benefits. A little bit of history on how this came about. Prior to ABLE passing in 2014, a person on Social Security Supplemental Income, SSI, could only have $2,000 in his or her name before they would start losing the benefits that they got each month from the federal government. So if you had $2,001, essentially Social Security does a sweep of your account and says, you're over your limit, I'm going to reduce your benefit. This ABLE program is 10 years in the making. It took 10 years to get it actually passed. Essentially, what it allows you to do is it allows a person to put money into an ABLE account, much like a college savings account. It's structured very similarly. And then that person can have up to $100,000 in that account before they would ever start losing their federal benefits. Again, the states passed these laws just very recently after 2014. We were the sixth state to launch a program. We launched back in December of 2016. We wanted to launch in 16 because the person saving, or the people saving for the person with a disability, can only put $14,000 in per year. And we heard loud and clear from the disability community, look, we want to be able to do it in 16 and 17. So we hurried up and got it launched. The one thing I'm most proud of in this program is the fact that we knew what we didn't know. What I mean by that is we partnered with essentially the entire disability community in this state, every nonprofit, state agencies, DHS, to find out what the disability community wanted in a plan. We can certainly do the technical aspects of it, but we didn't know all the needs that someone with a disability has. And so this group worked tirelessly for us at no compensation. I think we bought them coffee and donuts on at these meetings, but gave all of their time to put this together. And the reason they did is because they knew about it going. They knew about it in the past. They knew it was coming up. And so they put this plan together with in concert with us. And it's turned out to be great because we're getting a lot of great response in the plan. I'll give you, again, a couple statistics up here. We have 1.5 million in assets since December, which is we think is great. Actually, I updated these numbers just by hand here. It's 1.6 million, and just as of last week, 570 accounts in the plan. Again, we were the sixth state to launch. Again, much like College Savings, we asked for a loan last session, which the legislature graciously gave us to launch the program, and we're asking for a little bit more money this session to continue the program. But exactly like College Savings, we will run this program off of fees that are paid by the investors that are in the plan. Just as a way of comparing the two, College Savings and ABLE, they both all grow state and federally tax-free, the money in them. You can get a state tax deduction exactly the same as you can in College Savings with the ABLE program if you're investing in that program. And then lastly, on ABLE, we were fortunate to be one of the first states that launched. And one thing that we're really working hard on is sort of building a national reputation. And the reason you see two logos up here, you see Oregon ABLE and you see ABLE for All, the first six states that launched, we looked really hard at them. Many of them launched with one name. I'll give you an example. Ohio launched with the name Stable. And we thought it was a mistake to not put our name in the plan. We wanted Oregon in the plan. And so to reduce confusion, if someone out of state wants to invest in our program, they would simply get funneled to this ABLE for All site, which is exactly the same as our other site with a different branding on it. Same portfolio, same everything, but if you're out of state, you don't have to worry about, I don't want to invest in Oregon's plan. You can go to ABLE for All and do. That's why you see the two. They're exactly the same. The back office is all the same. We just didn't want to confuse Oregon's plan with a national plan. And I'm happy to announce that one thing we're working really hard on to try to keep fees down and reduce fees and also then to increase revenue is we've had a number of states contact us and say, hey, we don't want to do our own plan. We'd love to partner with you. Can we do that? We looked into this pretty hard, and we found out that a number of states are actually partnering on ABLE. And so just recently, we're going to announce this at our board meeting on Thursday. The state of Washington is going to join us as a partner, and that does two very important things for us. One, it immediately reduces fees because of the volume that we're going to get from Washington and Oregon combined, and then it also then increases our revenue as we have people invest. We'll take additional revenue off, pay back our loan quicker, and keep fees low. So that really is a nice bonus for us in getting these partnerships developed. So moving to the POP 105.
Senator Johnson.
Maybe you said this and I just drifted for a minute. How much is the loan to the ABLE program? Oh, right there, 433. What's the payback period? How soon would the general fund be reimbursed?
Co-Chair Manning, Senator Johnson, the last session we borrowed about $650,000 in that range, and we're looking to borrow a little bit more this session. There is no set payback period. I believe the legislation calls for us to pay it back as quickly as possible when revenues will allow, and that would be our goal, is to essentially figure out ways to pay it back at the same time of operating the program, getting that loan payback as quickly as possible, much like we did with 529. It doesn't specify a payback time period. So again, our total ask for ABLE this legislative session, 17-19, is, if you look at the next page, is $1.3 million. We're looking at ways to really try to reduce our general fund ask on this program. We know that times are extremely tight. We are very sensitive to that. And so we're looking at ways to have a little bit of general fund appropriation and then to possibly some additional changes with the fund shift to try to figure out ways where we can use some revenue coming in to the plan ongoing for this biennium. And while having that safety net of a little bit of money from the general fund to help keep the doors open and the lights on.
Senator Johnson?
What's the downside if the general fund request isn't funded or isn't funded at the full amount?
Senator Johnson, the downside is it would significantly hamper our ability to service the people who are investing in the program. We need to pay the couple of salaries that are working on this program. We can reduce the amount that we use for marketing, promotion, and travel, but we still need to pay salaries. And a lot of what we're doing, we're not doing a mass media campaign on this. This is really just boots on the ground. I don't know how many meetings we do a week, but it's several meetings per week partnering with these disability groups. So that's really where the bulk of our money is going, is salaries, mileage on the road, and travel to meet with people about this program. So it would certainly hurt us if we couldn't pay salaries. We can skinny back some of the promotion and materials, but we really need to be able to pay those salaries for folks to get out and talk about the program.
Senator?
How many people work in the 529 program?
Senator Manning, Senator Johnson, we have five total FTE in the 529 network. Five.
Mr. Chair, it would be very helpful to see a breakdown of the budget of both of these in terms of what's salary, what's travel, what's promotional. That would just be very, very useful.
Okay.
Not at that high a level. I really want, you know, it costs us $50 to drive to Madras. That's, and where, what I'm trying to figure out is, at a time when we are pushing on other agencies to do train the trainer kind of meetings, rather than putting circuit riders on the road, I'm trying to figure out if you already have this very well-advanced system or network of disability rights groups, how frequent are your dispatches out to meet with them? Why can't you do it by a webinar? Why can't you do it by sending a tape over, a master tape of this is what the program is about, and invite electronic responses? I'm just trying to figure out why you need two people to serve 530 folks in a nascent program.
Senator Manning, Senator Johnson, we do webinars, I think, I want to say two a month. But we're not just serving 530 people, we're serving the entire state. And so we're hoping that every person with a disability who qualifies for ABLE will invest in ABLE. And I agree with you, we don't want to be on the road any more than we have to be. So We do train the trainers. We have several folks that, again, in this working group who will do presentations for us. But at the end of the day, if folks want to hear from the state, we feel important that we have to be there in person.
I guess the only analogy I would make, and then Representative Reed may remember this, I certainly do. Once upon a time, there were individual PERS counselors, and it just became so overwhelming in terms of cost that PERS figured out a different way to do pre-retirement counseling. And I appreciate and laud the fact that you want to reach every Oregonian, but when we have this much general fund and this much ask, I'm trying to figure out why you need two people to get a program started when there already is a very well-embedded disability rights communication network.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, one thing I think it's worth remembering is sort of the trajectory of this program and the fact that it's pretty new, having started just in December. If we look back at the history of the 529 program, a similar thing, I wasn't here then, but might have been said about how are we getting this started. Now we look at the really significant assets and the large base of accounts. At the same time, those expenses have come down. So what we're really asking is for the funding to get this started. And I take your point about 530, but that's just in the first several months. So the trajectory of this, having several hundred accounts and $1.5 million assets already, I think bodes well for where this is going to go.
Mr. Treasurer, you're making my point. It's only been open a couple of months, and you got 530 subscribers already with virtually, you know, minimal.
I might object, Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson. I think that's with significant effort by the 529 team and a lot of assistance and a lot of good good work to get that word out. That's me.
And, yep, that is. I thank you.
Okay, so the last program to talk about is
put these for you.
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you. Is Oregon Saves, and I was looking as I was thinking about what I might say here. There's only a couple of you who have seen this in the 2015 session, so it probably bears a little bit of background. Apologies to Representative Gomberg and Senator Johnson, since you already know this. The lack of retirement savings and mechanism to engage in that in Oregon is and across the country is a real problem. There are a million people in Oregon who are working and don't have access to a mechanism to save for their retirement at work, and that's really what motivated the legislation that we passed in the 2015 session. That history goes back a ways. A task force that was started in the 2013 session that looked at this issue and recommended legislation, which we ultimately passed in 2015, that created a board, which I was on as a member of the House. Representative Marsh now has that seat, and I chair as state treasurer. We've been engaged in important work designing the particulars of the program, selecting a contractor, and preparing for rollout, which will start later this year. We will do that. Actually, let's go back one slide. I jumped ahead a little bit. That will be in phases. We're going to start with two pretty small-scale pilot programs. The first one will start in July and then roll out according to the size of employers. So much like you've heard about the 529 program and ABLE, we are seeking a general fund loan to extend that reach and make sure that we're on a good trajectory to help people save for their retirement. This is a structure around an opt-out IRA. So it's the money of an employee, not an employer. It is not PERS. There is no a promise or liability for the state. It's simply making it easier for people to save their own money for retirement. And I think we all have a stake in that success because, of course, as people have access to their own assets as they near and enter retirement, we will have hopefully less demand on the other aspects of our budget.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, you and I went round and round about this when this bill passed, and I hope in your outreach material you make it abundantly clear to folks that this is not PERS. With PERS so prominently in the news right now, I think that the potential for confusion is breathtaking, and it worries me. If the pension plan is subject to the vicissitudes of the stock market and people lose savings, how that's explained to unsophisticated savers, I think is incredibly important. And I would hope that you would make a major effort to prepare materials that fully inform people that, you know, you're not going to retire at your end of 30 years with 105% of salary. And, oh, by the way, there's no market exposure here. I worry about this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, thank you for that comment. I think it is always going to be a priority for us to make clear what this program is and what it is not. To say it again, we want to make sure that people have a chance to save their own money. This is a defined contribution, an IRA, not a pension. And yes, often when I'm explaining it, one of the first things I say is this is not PERS. So I appreciate your comments.
Representative Bumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Treasurer.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to thank you for championing this program and bringing it forward and addressing a serious need in Oregon. As you know, I've had some concerns about the amount of time it'll take for small businesses, Oregon's smallest businesses, to comply with this this new opportunity. And I think it was the reports of your own agency that came back and said they estimated it would take most small businesses about 2 hours per month in the process of completing all the different details. I would just like to say that I hope as this program moves forward and gets on its feet that we can take a look at ways to simplify the process so that we're not only providing opportunities for Oregonians to save, but also making it easier for the businesses that have to administer that for them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gomberg, I think we are working very hard to do that. And my impression, having gone through a couple of demonstrations and seminars, is that that's on the conservative end of things. And I expect that with this, as with many other things, there will be a learning curve. And while it might take something more in the first month, I have a lot of faith and confidence in Oregonians and small business owners in particular, and I think they'll be fast.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just note that I've spent some time going through the pilot website, the pilot enrollment site, as a member of the board. Although I haven't been involved on as big a level since we've been in session, since I've been on a member of the board. But I went through the website, and I was pretty impressed as I went through it with the eyes of a new employer and maybe a new employer who's not so enthusiastic or hasn't yet bought into the program. And I think it's pretty user-friendly. I was pretty impressed. Yes. I have also, by the way, discussed with staff of the program further introduction of it to legislators as it gets down the road here, because I think this is something that's going to be touching a lot of our constituents, and all of us are going to need to know what this program is about and how it works and be able to answer questions and be able to pitch for the program when it actually hits the broad swath of employers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marsh, the one other thing that I should have mentioned at the top, I'm more or less pinch hitting here for our very talented Executive Director, Lisa Messina, who couldn't be here. She's and her team have done an excellent job getting us through this process on a pretty aggressive timeline, so we feel good about that, but appreciate your comments, too.
Mr. Treasurer, I'm sorry, but I don't recall if we had gone through the informal process of putting our names on the record.
I did when I started. I said, I'm Tobias Reed. I'm happy to be state treasurer, and I introduced Michael Parker, but I'm happy to do that again.
Well, you just did. So.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, well, thank you, sir.
No problem. So this is the summary, as you saw, and this is the roll-up of Oregon Saves. As we've said all along, we're continuing to work with LFO on the specific technical adjustments that might be needed. And with that, we'll move to the vacancies report. Mr. Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Darren Bond, Deputy State Treasurer. This is the required vacancies report. We don't have very many. These are the long-term vacancies. To quickly go through them, the investment compliance program, this is one of those that's been hard to recruit for. We've had a number of false starts or a number of recruitments where we didn't find good candidates. We actually did recently make an offer, and the person pulled out in the end, so we're back reassessing what we can do with that. The info systems, the IS-8 position in IT, we've been waiting on that as we narrow down the technology solution and the cash management programs. We want to make sure that we're buying the right talent. So as Cora talked about yesterday, the delay in that program as we have reassessed our banking service provider relationships has just pushed this back. And again, it's important to us that we get the right technology skill sets in. So that's where that is. The Economist 4, which is actually now an investment analyst position, but we have harmonized these. This is how we originally set it up last session before we had the investment analyst series set up, is one of the several positions that you gave us last session, and it's the last one remaining for us to fill. We've just been going through a methodical process of filling for need, and this one has yet to be filled. So good. That's them. We have a few other short-term vacancies, but these are all of our long-term vacancies.
Move on to the reduction options, and as we've been talking about consistently through our presentation, the two places where we have any general fund exposure are in the 529 network and in Oregon Saves. Because Oregon Able is already operating and serving Oregonians, we feel like the Oregon Saves is really the only place that those options exist. They're pretty self-explanatory in general. The more we need to reduce there, makes our outreach efforts more difficult. We've also got work to do on key performance measures. We obviously need to create them for the ABLE program and Oregon Saves, and we have some opportunities to update and revise KPMs as our work, particularly in CMRP and some of the other things, continue to progress. And finally, our roll-up entirely. You know how that works. And that concludes our presentation. We're happy to respond to any questions or ideas that you have.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Seeing no questions, LFO.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, tomorrow is Thursday, and you will have two work sessions tomorrow. I believe Senate Bill 87, if I recall correctly, and the State Library's primary budget measure. So okay. It should be a shorter day for the subcommittee. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
That being said, we will close the public hearing on SB 5541, Treasurer of the State. And thank you very much for your presentation. And to the committee members, thank you so much for your indulgence. And we're going to adjourn for the day and reconvene tomorrow, 1500 hours, 3 o'clock civilian clock time. And, sir, we are adjourned. Clock time. And, sir, we are adjourned.